didn't even have a costume on, just an enormous afro wig. Both boys pressed against Spencer, squeezing her in between them. She looked like she was having the time of her life. Behind them, I noticed Diana Berry, a girl in my AP French class, dressed in a plaid bodice, white stockings, and stacked penny loafer heels, puffing on a pipe. I laughed so hard, I almost spit out my Coke. After Autumn and I were out of earshot of Miss B, I said, "Is Diana supposed to be slutty Sherlock Holmes?" "Ooh, I'll solve that mystery, and then give you a lap dance." Seriously, I would have thought she was better than that. "Diana's a nice girl," Autumn said. I shook my head. "What does that have to do with anything?" "She's just having fun." She said it like her words were loaded, like we hadn't made those same jokes at the costume shop last week. It occurred to me that maybe we were having some kind of secret conversation, like this wasn't about Diana at all. "Look at her," I said. Diana tugged on the back of her skirt as she swayed to the music, trying to keep her butt covered. I mean, Diana was a pretty girl and super curvy, but her costume hugged in awkward places. It pinched around her arms, and the zipper wrinkled up instead of lying flat down her back. She looked much prettier in her school uniform, I thought. "Does she look like she's having fun, or does she look like she desperately wants some guy to pay attention to her?" Autumn wrinkled her nose. "Are you going to act like this the whole night?"
"Act like what?"
"Nothing. Whatever. I just want to have a good time."
"Me too,"
I said. I didn't understand what was going on. Autumn practically tackled me when I walked in, and now she was trying to pick a fight with me over Diana's costume. And then I noticed Connor Hughes, also in a prison outfit, watching Diana dance. My heart dropped. A bunch of guys were sitting on top of a tall stack of floor mats. Bobby Doyle whispered something in Connor's ear, but whatever he said wasn't interesting enough for Connor to pull his eyes off Diana. I wanted to look away, but I couldn't. Of course guys like Connor were going to notice the scantily clad girls dancing in front of them. I mean, how could they not? It was practically instinctive, primordial. Immunity to booty and boobs did not occur in teenage boys. But I felt completely stupid for putting on lipstick tonight. It made me feel as desperate as Diana and all the other girls. It made me hate myself for even trying. Because really, I knew better. When the song ended, Diana limped over to the bleachers, slipping off her very tall heels as she went. Connor's eyes moved off her and roamed around the gym. They stopped on me. I took a deep breath and looked past him at some invisible person in the crowd. I wanted his eyes to stay on me, hold me the same way they had held Diana. But I only kept his attention for a second, barely a second. In fact, I couldn't even be sure if he'd noticed me at all. It happened that quick. A terrible feeling formed in the pit of my stomach. Had I imagined things with Connor? I mean, yeah, we'd kissed, but he kissed girls all the time. Maybe it had been a dare. Or maybe I was a terrible kisser. I hated how I felt. Stupid, insecure, used. Another song came on. Everyone cheered. Autumn, too.
"Come on, Natalie. Let's dance."
"I don't know this one." I reached for a napkin and rubbed at my lips. Autumn grabbed my hand.
"Neither do I, but that doesn't mean we can't dance to it."
She started moving to the music, swinging my arm to the beat. It was almost more embarrassing than actually dancing. I pulled my hand free.
"I think I'll just hang out here. The table's a little messy, plus I feel bad about being late. I should help out."
"Please,"
Autumn begged, trying to grab my arm again.
"Dance with me."
I took a step back and she got all frowny.
"Come on, I don't want to leave you here standing all by yourself."
"I'm fine," I told her. "Go ahead." Autumn gave me a look.
She knew me too well. I wanted to tell her about the whole Connor thing, but I couldn't. Not with her in that weird costume. Not with some crappy rap song on full blast.
Whatever.
Autumn snapped, picking up the fishtail train of her sequined dress and walking away. Marcy Cooperstein was already out on the dance floor, dressed as some kind of go-go dancing crayon. She was waving her hands for Autumn, and when Autumn ran over, they practically jumped into each other's arms. They started dancing, spinning each other around, and doing some funny choreographed moves that they were clearly making up on the fly. I tried not to be jealous, but I was. I was bitterly jealous. I immediately busied myself, making sure all the snacks were out, that we had plenty of ice in the cooler. Over my shoulder, I heard the rest of the kids scream every time a new song came on. It made me feel so incredibly lonely. When I ran out of chores to occupy me, I watched Spencer. Her moves were so smooth and confident, even if she looked totally ridiculous in her costume. She didn't just dance with one or two guys. She danced with the entire school. Boys, girls. Everyone watched her, Connor included. I saw him. Despite my best efforts, every time I tried not to look at him, that's exactly where my eyes seemed to land. At a break between songs, Spencer headed over to the snack table, followed by her pack of friends. Her forehead sparkled with sweat. She reached for a can of Sprite from the cooler and held it to her cheek. Her friends went off to the bathroom to check their hair and makeup. Spencer walked over to where I was standing and smiled at my costume.
"You look so classy,"
she decided, which made it seem even more wrong for the night. I tried to turn away from her, but I hit her with one of my wings. Spencer peered inside my cardboard plane and bit her lip, like she was debating whether or not to tell me something.
"You know, Natalie, you have such a good body. Your butt looks totally hot in those pants. Why are you hiding it from everyone?"
I didn't like the feeling of Spencer checking me out. It made me feel small, even though I was taller than her. "I'm not hiding anything."
"Well, why aren't you dancing? Do you need me to teach you a few quick moves in the hallway?"
"I'm fine, but thanks." I sounded anything but thankful.
"I seriously don't get you."
Spencer twisted around and leaned against the table, pushing her boobs out.
"You could get any guy in this room if you just loosened up a little."
"Thanks for the advice," I said, annoyed, because I had the guy everyone wanted, only I didn't anymore.
"Looks like you've got Mike Domsky tangled up in knots."
She smiled, smug.
"Too easy."
"Just be careful," I pleaded, but Spencer didn't hear me. She was already bouncing back to the dance floor, and what did she need to be careful about, really? She was having a fabulous time. She got the attention she wanted, and I had neither of those things. Connor walked across the gym toward where I was standing. Before I knew what I was really doing, I stepped out of my cardboard plane and kicked it under the table, and then I started fixing stuff that didn't really need to be fixed, just for something to do. I heard him come up behind me. It was almost too easy.
"Hey, Sterling,"
he said.
"You having fun?"
I laughed.
"Not as much fun as you. I've seen you drooling over every girl in the gym." "So, you've been watching me?"
He winked, all coy and cocky. My voice caught in my throat.
"Don't flatter yourself." "Why are you so mean to me?"
I said, "Because I don't trust you."
Which was true.
And as much as I knew that, the rush I felt when I had Connor's attention still made me feel drunk. I was acting crazy, and I didn't think I could control myself. I didn't even want to try. He didn't say anything else, so I kept my back to him and dumped a bunch of M&Ms in a bowl. He reached for one almost immediately. At least, I thought that's what he was reaching for. But his hand stopped just short of the bowl.
and when he opened it up, I saw a slip of paper in the center of his palm. I turned around to face him.
"What's that?"
I asked, even though I knew. I knew, but I couldn't believe it.
"Nothing,"
he said, and that's when I smelled the beer on his breath.
"Why don't you see for yourself?"
"I'm not taking a dirty piece of paper out of your hand," I told him.
"Sterling."
He laughed at first. And then, when he saw I wasn't kidding, he groaned. I stared him down. How dare he groan at me? Like I was so impossible? His eyes were all sleepy and soft, but his cuteness could not dilute my anger. "Why don't you give this to one of the slutty girls you've been watching? Like, I don't know, Spencer. She had your number on her stupid prostitute shirt. I'm sure she'd be okay with fooling around with you tonight."
"Just take it."
I crossed my arms, so Connor put the paper inside my pocket. His hand warmed me like a hot little coal. And when he pulled it out and reached for some M&Ms, I was sure the whole bowl would melt. His smugness made my stomach flip over. "Here." I pulled the paper out of my pocket and tried to give it back. "I'm not interested." Connor stepped toward me. Since I didn't have my plane on, he could get really close. Close enough that I saw he'd shaved and had a tiny cut right where his chin met his neck. Close enough that I could smell the plastic of his costume. He took my hand and folded it over his number to make sure I held on to it. He did it just like a magician, sticking a red foam ball into his hand for a trick. And then he walked away. I unfurled my hand and saw the paper. It was no trick, and I knew what had just happened. Things could have only gone so far when we were flirting in the hallway or that night in the bathroom, but Connor had raised the stakes. Suddenly, it was my move, or game over. Chapter 19. After the dance ended, it was the student council's job to make sure the decorations were taken down and the leftover food was cleaned up. Most of the students were already gone. Just a few people stuck around, and I was the only one really working. Coach Fallon led me around, pointing out all the stepped-on candy corns and sticky spots on his gym floor. I wanted so badly to tell him that it was his beloved athletes who had decided to throw candy at each other, whose bumping and grinding had sloshed the soda out of their cans, not me, not the girl who had cleaned up everyone else's good time, like Cinderella. Autumn sat in the bleachers, talking to Marcy and a few other girls. I was pissed that she wasn't helping clean up. The longer I had to stay here, the longer it would take before we could get back to my house. I was exhausted, and I could only imagine how tired Autumn felt. Once she'd left me to go dance with Marcy, she hadn't stopped until the last song. She'd ignored me practically the whole night. After Connor left the dance, I kept touching the piece of paper in my pocket, like I needed to make sure I hadn't dreamt the whole thing up. Because he walked right past me on his way out the door without a second look. I guessed I really did embarrass him.
"Hey,"
Autumn said, coming up behind me.
"A bunch of people are going out to Bobby Doyle's house."
"Yeah,"
I said.
"So?"
"So I'm going to stop by there for a little while. Do you want to come?"
"I thought you were sleeping over." I could hear the hurt in my voice. I hated it.
"I still am. I'm just taking a slight detour first, for an hour tops."
It wasn't even an invitation. It was an ultimatum. I looked over her shoulder at Marcy and the other girls. They watched the two of us somewhat impatiently. I was obviously holding up their evening, only I didn't care. I wasn't going to make this easy for Autumn. So I turned and started walking away from her, toward the supply closet. Autumn followed, but slowly, like a child being dragged through a department store.
"I don't get it,"
I said once we were out of view of everyone else. Marcy Cooperstein was a complete bitch to you, and now you're ditching me for her to go to some party full of jerks who've made fun of you? Even if a part of me wanted to go, I couldn't. Connor was in all likelihood going to be there. I didn't want to make it seem like I was suddenly chasing after him, or whatever it was that Autumn was chasing after.
God, Natalie, it's just a party, and I'm not ditching you. I want you to come.
Autumn dropped her head back.
Marcy apologized, and I forgave her. It's over.
I pulled open the supply closet and chucked the broom inside. I'm going home, I told her. You can do what you want. And that's exactly what Autumn did, without even saying goodbye. An hour later, I pulled into our driveway. As I walked toward the house, I crammed my cardboard airplane into one of the trash cans. Amelia Earhart had crashed and burned. Mom and Dad were in the living room. Dad was asleep. Mom curled up in his arms.
How was the dance?
She whispered. And then, glancing behind me with a bit of surprise, she asked,
Where's Autumn?
She felt sick, I lied, and headed upstairs. Cardboard scraps and art supplies were all over my room. I didn't want to bother cleaning them up, so I threw everything in a pile on the floor, shut off the lights, and climbed into my bed. I lay awake, picturing Autumn at the party. I wondered if she was having fun. She probably was. I bet Marcy was making sure of that. She wasn't going to let this opportunity slip by. She was probably talking about me, telling Autumn she'd done the right thing by leaving me behind. As mad as I was at Autumn, I still worried about her. Despite the fact that she'd basically broken my heart, I hoped that Autumn wouldn't get made fun of by anyone. Lord knows that Marcy wouldn't stand up for her. I put my cell phone next to my pillow just in case I got a teary phone call from her, so I could be there for Autumn, like I always was. I closed my eyes. I tried to sleep, but I couldn't, especially knowing that I'd have to lie there all night alone, thinking about Autumn at that party, without me. I found Connor's number crumpled in the pocket of my pants. Midnight had come and gone, but it didn't matter. I flipped open my phone and pounded out a text. Hey. Then I waited for what seemed like an hour, feeling dizzy and pathetic. Maybe he was at the party. Maybe he'd hold up his phone and show it to everyone, a trophy of my utter humiliation. My phone vibrated.
Come over.
And the next thing I knew, I was sneaking out of my room. Chapter 20. I drove up the long private road that led to the Hughes Christmas tree farm. My headlights flashed across a bunch of cheerful hand-painted signs, nailed to wooden posts, and placed every 100 feet along the drainage ditch. Visit us in spring. Hay rides. Try our pumpkin butter. They looked weirdly foreboding in the middle of the night. I ignored the turn for visitors parking, because there was no way I was walking alone in the dark. Instead, I kept driving until I reached the top of his driveway. I killed the engine and cut the lights. Connor's house sat at the foot of a hill, a huge hunter green Victorian with white wooden shutters on every window and a wraparound front porch. The front door had one of those screens that always slam with a thunderclap. Humongous pumpkins with gnarled stems were set out on every step, along with neatly tied bales of hay. The windows were dark, except for a soft kitchen light casting down on a stove and a shiny red tea kettle. The whole place looked fake, like a house in a painting. I flipped open my phone to text Connor, and then snapped it shut, because it occurred to me that Connor might have fallen asleep, even though I'd rushed right over. Or maybe he'd passed out since he'd obviously been drinking before the dance. A deep embarrassment burned so hot that I opened my window a crack. I would die if Connor saw my text the next morning. He'd know that I'd come here only to drive back home when he hadn't woken up. Those are the kinds of stories people laugh about forever. It would ruin the rest of my senior year. So I came up with a new plan. If I didn't text him, I could say that I was the one who'd decided against coming, that I had stood him up. Then I saw him come out from around the side of the house. He'd changed out of his prisoner costume and into a navy hooded sweatshirt, jeans, and a gray wool hat. He walked slowly, confidently. He pulled a hand out of his pocket to wave. I sucked in a big breath. Okay. This was happening. I was here, he was here, and in all likelihood, we were going to hook up. As straightforward as that seemed, the moment still felt completely surreal. But I swallowed those feelings down because I wanted to look relaxed, like this wasn't a big deal, because it wasn't. He wasn't. Maybe to some other girls at school, to girls like Spencer, but not to me. As soon as Spencer crossed my mind, I started thinking about the things she'd said at girls' night. Maybe she did know what she was talking about. I knew what I wanted from Connor tonight. I wanted to forget about Autumn. I wanted company. So long as I wasn't looking for anything more than a distraction, what was wrong with coming here? I wasn't some hopeless romantic praying that Connor might fall in love with me. In fact, I wanted nothing even close to that. The key was having the power, using it to get what I wanted. So I got out of the car and casually leaned against my door. I waited for him to come to me.
Hey, he whispered. You made it.
Yeah, I said and stared off into the dark. I thought you might be at Bobby's party.
I was, but I left when I got your text.
He smiled and my entire body tensed up.
So, do you want to come inside?
I rolled my eyes. I'm not going inside. What if your parents wake up? He spread his feet apart and rocked his weight from side to side.
They're not going to wake up, he assured me.
I couldn't help but think of all the other girls he'd probably done this with. I shook my head.
No way.
He glanced in my back seat.
We could hang out in your car.
Ew, come on.
All right,
he said, suddenly sounding tired. We were at an impasse. The thing was, I didn't want to go home. Something in the distance caught his attention. He turned back, excited.
Look, I've got an idea. Stay here.
Okay, I said, but it came out like a question. Probably because I had no idea what he had in mind. He jogged off back to his house, and I was left there, standing alone. Three mini forests stretched out beyond Connor's house, one to the left, one to the right, and one up the hill. Pine trees were planted in neat rows, like corn. Behind me, there was a gift store made to look like a shed. I saw Christmas ornaments hanging inside, homemade jellies and pantry stuff, and scented candles in tiny mason jars. Planted next to the store was a sizable vegetable garden. My family had never gotten a Christmas tree from here because they were way too expensive. And after a big, long debate on whether we could justify the ecological repercussions of getting a tree, we went to Home Depot, where they set up a little chain-link pen in the parking lot. Those trees were all $20. Here, he paid for the experience. Connor came back out of his house. He had a blanket slung over his shoulder and a tin lantern.
Come on, Sterling,
he said, and pointed to the woods off to his left.
Let's go for a walk.
I followed him up a narrow path through the evergreen trees. We didn't talk, probably because I stayed a few steps behind him. I couldn't stop looking around. Most of the trees were really tall, but some were the same height as me. I reached out and touched the needles, and they varied as much as the sizes. Sharp, soft, waxy. Little piles of hay had been piled around each tree trunk to keep them warm, I guessed. It was pretty cold out. I could see my breath, and it was quiet, freakishly quiet. The night sky was pricked by a million more stars than I could ever see from my house. Stars so small they looked like dust. At the very back edge of the property, we reached a shed with wooden shingles and a pitched roof. It looked like it could be a little kid's playhouse. Connor fiddled with the padlock, the light from his lantern swishing across the knotted, rough shed walls and brightening the first few fir trees around us.
"We don't use this shed much, except in December," he explained as he jiggled the key.
He gave the door a hard tug, but it wouldn't open. Then, when he tried to pull the key out, it got stuck inside the lock. He cursed under his breath. I waited behind him, hands pushed down deep into the front pockets of my jeans.
"It's getting late," I told him, sounding impatient because it was the middle of the night and I was finding it harder with every passing second not to turn around and race back to my car.
Click. Connor unlatched the padlock and opened the door. The metal hinges squeaked like out-of-tune violin strings. I followed him inside. The shed smelled like we had climbed up into one of the pine trees, sweet and syrupy green. It was so intense it made me woozy. I felt my way through the darkness and caught my knee on something. A clatter interrupted the stillness. Connor held the lantern in my direction.
"You okay?"
A rack of old metal handsaws appeared next to me, piled high and haphazardly. I had knocked a few on the floor. As I assured Connor that I was fine, I reminded myself that we were deep in the woods, so no one would have heard the noise. No one would find us here. But I still felt exposed, vulnerable with his light trained on me, so I ducked down to the shadows to pick up what had fallen. Connor hung the lantern from a nail over the door. It cast a dull light on the crowded space. I saw more equipment, bundles of holiday lights, some vintage sleds, a wheelbarrow. He moved some things around, restacking bags of seed and rolls of burlap, and spread the wool blanket down on the small space he'd cleared. He sat down, Indian style, and held out his hand for me. I hated that I was breathing so hard, panting white clouds of hot breath into the cold air. I knew Connor could tell I was nervous. He didn't know what to do or say. I could see him going over it all in his head. He gave me his number, and I called him and came here. I should know what's next. Except I hesitated, and his hand dropped. I finally sat next to him and stretched my legs out. Immediately, they started to quiver, but before he could notice, I leaned in and kissed him fast. I pressed my lips against his, my hair falling around our faces. He pulled away before I had a chance to open my mouth. Doubt crept through me. My thoughts shouted inside my head, "Get up, Natalie! Go back to the car!" Then, Connor pushed the hair out of my face and threaded it behind my ear. His movements were softer and slower than mine. He leaned in close to my face, his eyes dark but glittering, like two lakes in wintertime. And then he kissed me, this time with lips parted as if he was whispering into my mouth. I closed my eyes and tried to catch the beat and the rhythm of how this all went. His hands moved up to my shoulders, pulling me closer to him. He was warm, hot even. I wrapped my arms around his neck, tucked my fingers down into the back of his collar, my whole body folded into his warmth, and then we both lay down. Connor stopped kissing me and grabbed the corners of the blanket, wrapping it around us. We baked inside. It was so hot, and we were moving and pressing and shifting all over each other. My mind completely shut off, and we became the working parts of a motor, circular and precise and perfect. I was nervous that Connor might try to take things further than I wanted to go, but he didn't. We only stopped kissing to catch our breath. This was my least favorite part, when Connor and I were forced to make small talk to fill the awkward pauses. He asked me 7 different times if I wanted some water. I finally said sure, but when I realized he'd have to go back to the house to get it, I told him to forget it. At some point, I asked him if he had any siblings, because It seemed like the kind of basic information you should know about someone you're making out with. I learned he had 3 older sisters and forgot their names immediately, although I was pretty sure they all started with the letter C. Connor was the baby. He seemed proud of this, which I found strange. A very, very small part of me wanted a miracle to happen, where Connor would pull back from my lips and say something profound or beautifully poetic, because when he touched me, things felt just shy of perfect. Nothing like that happened, though, so instead I let myself enjoy the way he ran his hands through my hair. I couldn't believe how amazing a simple gesture like that could make me feel, as if my veins were suddenly pumping electricity and not blood. After a while, the kissing slowed down, and we just lay together, my head on his chest. I hadn't thought about my fight with Autumn since I had gotten in the car to come here, but I was thinking about her now, wondering if she'd gone home after the party, or if she'd slept over at Marcy's house. I lifted my head and stared down at Connor's sweatshirt, at the Ross Academy football stitched on the center. Being here was like spending the night tucked away in a dream. I was able to forget all my problems for a while, except I was starting to wake up. "I'd better get going," I said. I started looking around for my coat.
"Here."
He stepped into a dark corner and reappeared with it. It had gotten some sawdust on it, and he brushed it off. When I took it, I meant to say thank you, but instead I said, "No one can know that I came here to see you, okay?" He made a strange face, like he didn't understand. "I don't want to be your girlfriend or anything like that." I instantly regretted saying this, not because I didn't mean it, but because it was so presumptuous. He looked like he was trying to see whether or not I was joking, and then he grabbed me and pulled me close.
"You're funny, Sterling."
He leaned in to kiss me, and I let him, but it was a last kiss, not the start of anything else. And then I walked to the car by myself, leaving Connor behind to lock up. I left it all behind in the shed. It belonged there. It was not going to be a part of the rest of my life. Chapter 21. When I woke up around noon, it was as if I'd been dipped in pine sap. Even with my face buried in my pillow, I could still smell the sharply sweet scent. The sheets felt extraordinarily cool and smooth compared with Connor's wool blanket. My body ached from rolling around on the unforgiving wood floor of the shed, but it was a good, secret ache. That feeling lasted pretty much the whole day, distracting me from my fight with Autumn. I rationed my memories with Connor, taking little sips just enough to quench my thirst. I had to be careful with what I had until I could get more. I didn't hear from him for the rest of the weekend, and he didn't hear from me. I had homework and SAT prep. I had to clean my room and my bathroom. I had to get my life in order. It wasn't like I had my cell in my hand waiting for his call. If anything, I was waiting for Autumn's. I figured it was a case of us both needing time to cool down, a little space from each other. I knew we'd work things out soon. After all, we were best friends. We'd never even really gotten into a fight before, not one like this. So I wasn't scared. If anything, it was preparation for what was to come with college. We'd have to get used to spending time apart. But my mom and dad were suspicious. They kept coming upstairs to check on me, bringing food and drinks, and giving me first crack at the Sunday newspaper. I didn't want to talk about my fight with Autumn, but I did invite my mom into my room to watch Singing in the Rain, the next movie on the AFI list. I didn't feel bad about watching it without Autumn either. It seemed a fitting punishment, and the movie was good, too. Corny and romantic. She would have liked it. When she hadn't called by Sunday evening, I started to lose my appetite. A few times I picked up the phone to call her, but I always stopped myself. What would I say? Did you have fun at the party without me? Are you glad you left me? I didn't want to ask those questions. because I feared her answers would be yes. I hardly slept Sunday night, tossed and turned for hours, thinking about what school was going to be like. I even thought about texting Connor to see if he was awake, but talked myself out of that. I didn't want to look desperate. I had to show some restraint. Monday was the first bitterly cold day of the season, an ominous reminder that winter wasn't far off. The sharp air cut right through my wool tights. I had no idea what I would do the moment I reached the stop sign at the end of my block. Would I make a left and pick up Autumn, even though we hadn't spoken since the dance? Or would I make a right and go straight to school? I sat there for a few seconds, staring down to the left at an empty street, until another car came up behind me. It ended up being a much shorter ride to school without having to cut across town and back for Autumn. 10 minutes instead of 25. When I stepped out of my car, I shivered. From the cold and the nerves. What would things be like when I saw Autumn? How should I act when I saw Connor? I had no precedent for either situation. I spent all of homeroom lingering near the door, glancing every so often down the hall at Autumn's locker. I kept imagining her standing in the center of her huge living room window, flanked by her mother's heavy plum drapes, her head turned all the way to the right so she could see down to the stop sign. I should have picked her up. But could Autumn really have expected that, after everything that had gone down on Friday and the silence after? Was I expected to pretend like everything was fine? I couldn't do that. Autumn needed to know that she'd hurt me. She finally arrived about a minute before the late bell, scampering down the hall to her locker. She had on her red puffer vest and her favorite fuzzy woolen hat, the ivory one with the ear flaps that her grandma had knit for her when she'd first started high school. I'd always thought the hat was so goofy, like something a sheep-herding Swedish yodeler would wear. She really liked it, though I hadn't seen her wear it for a couple of years. It wasn't even cold enough for a hat. Not really. I quickly took my seat, opened my notebook, and pretended to study the calculus equations I had already memorized over the weekend. But inside, my mind spun numbers and values and X's and Y's. I decided that if Autumn did try to talk to me, I'd hear her out. But I wouldn't forgive her. At least, not right away.
Hey!
I looked up as Autumn walked past me and sat with some other girls in the back of the classroom. A terrible ache swelled in my stomach when I realized that Marcy wasn't one of them, and I was quickly running out of people to blame. Chapter 22. Freshman year, I found a way to get changed out of my bathing suit without ever having to be completely naked. The complicated dance looked anything but graceful. I would certainly give Spencer a huge laugh. But I'd mastered it, and now, as a senior, I could do it faster than any girl in the locker room. Not exactly the kind of talent you'd note on your college applications, but a skill that had served me well. First, I pulled my arms through my bathing suit straps and positioned it like a tube top. I wore a navy Speedo one-piece, which fit extra snug. I knew it wouldn't slip down, but I still kept my elbows pinned to my side. Then I put my bra on over the suit, and as soon as I had it latched, I pulled the suit down to my belly button. That was the trickiest part, moving fast enough to keep the pool water from seeping into the cotton. A second too long, and the bra cups would stay damp until well after lunch, which felt as uncomfortable as it sounds. Next, I put on my Oxford shirt and did up the buttons, then pulled my skirt up over my hips. After that, I could discreetly trade my bathing suit for my underwear and my spandex shorts without anyone seeing a thing. Not that any of the other girls were looking. A bell rang, and I slowly walked up the stairs to the freshman hallway, where Autumn would normally wait for me. I told myself she wouldn't be there, and she wasn't. But Connor was. He leaned against the big wooden banister, talking to two guys. I could tell he noticed me, the way the corners of his mouth lifted. I let mine lift, too, and ignored Autumn's braided blonde hair bobbing far off down the hallway, already on her way to our next class. I kept walking. Connor broke off from his friends. He sped up until he was right beside me, but not with me. There was just enough vacant space to keep us from looking together.
You're breaking the rules, I whispered.
When can I see you again?
He whispered back. If you don't get away from me, it'll be never. But before he could answer, Spencer tackled me.
Natalie, I've been dying to talk to you all weekend.
Hey, I said and watched over Spencer's shoulder as Connor disappeared down the hallway. Then I smiled at her, thinking of my secret. I was sure she'd be proud of the way I was handling Connor. Spencer looped her arm through mine.
So, there's a crazy rumor flying all over school about something shocking that happened this weekend.
Her normally high-pitched voice dropped into something deeper, more suspicious and sly. For a second, I worried that Connor might have let something slip. The word had gotten out, and the good feelings I'd had a moment before evaporated. I pulled Spencer over into a corner.
What? What happened?
Come on, I'll walk you to class, and along the way, I will tell you the miraculous tale of one girl's takedown of Mike Domsky.
The story quickly spilled out. On Sunday, Mike had gotten a hold of Spencer's number. He'd called her and asked if she'd wanted to go to the movies. She had to stop stringing him along, he'd said. The way she'd rubbed against him at the Halloween dance and flirted at Bobby Doyle's party was enough to drive a guy insane. They had to go on a proper date. Spencer said yes, but she told him she had to go to her grandma's house for an early dinner.
Isn't your grandma dead?
I asked. Spencer winked. She told Mike that she would meet him at the theater at 8 o'clock. Mike arrived early. He dressed up. He waited outside. At 8:05, Spencer called Mike and claimed to be stuck in traffic. She asked Mike to go into the theater and save them seats. She didn't want to miss any of the plot, and that way he could fill her in. Mike paid for 2 tickets and left Spencer's with the box office girl. He didn't know what kind of snack Spencer might like, so he bought a bunch. Twizzlers, popcorn, those little pretzel bits with the cheese inside.
Wait, I'm actually starting to feel bad for him, I said.
Remember, this is the guy who defaced your poster, who crashed your girls' night, who...
Okay, I'm back. Keep going.
Spencer texted him about 10 minutes later. Crawling traffic, she said, but she was close. And then, something else.
I told him to whip it out and have it ready for me. He wrote back, you nasty little girl.
Ew, he did not!
Spencer could barely keep from laughing.
Anyway, a bunch of girls and I were already hiding in the very last row, and we could see him shimmying and wriggling in his seat. I ducked out and found the manager and let him know that there was a boy with his pants down in Theater 12.
No way.
I think the manager wanted to call the police, but when he saw us girls laughing, he just threw Mike out. It was epic. And I think I taught him a lesson for sure.
How did you know he would do it?
Because for the last 3 weeks, I've been making him think that some kind of dirty hookup was the inevitable end of this ridiculous flirtation we've been going through.
I'm proud of you, I told her, which seemed like a weird thing to say, but that was how I felt.
Okay, I'd better get going. See you later, Natalie.
The bell rang, and I ran to Western Philosophy. Mike Domsky came down the hall from the other direction, looking angrier than I'd ever seen him. Jaw set, teeth clenched, gripping the straps of his book bag in 2 tight fists. I didn't feel bad for him. He deserved to be humiliated. I figured it might even do him some good. Chapter 23 Connor texted me just after midnight that Friday night. I was surprised and not surprised at the same time. He was waiting out on the driveway when I pulled up. As soon as I stepped out of the car and into the night, he reached for my hand. The whole walk up to the shed was a flirtatious build. I started jogging backward, silently daring him to come and get me. Connor made chase, so I turned and sprinted into the woods. He kept pace easily, his hands grabbing at my peacoat.
I let him pull it off me and kept running, managing to stay just out of his reach by circling and dodging around the bristly pines. Both of us were laughing, and we didn't even stop to think someone might hear us. I slipped on a pine cone. Connor caught me in his arms, his hands gripping me through my clothes. He leaned in to kiss me, and when he closed his eyes, I saw my chance and broke free again. I felt drunk, even though I wasn't, and while I ran away from him, I still raced headlong toward our shed. I couldn't get there fast enough. He came up behind me when I reached the door and fiddled with the lock, his arms wrapped around me, both of us heaving in cold air and blowing out puffs of steam. He fired up the little lantern, and then we tumbled down to the wool blanket. Connor rolled on his back and brought me on top of him. His hands slipped underneath my shirt. They were cold enough to shock me. I lifted myself up. "What are you doing?"
"Huh?"
Connor's cheeks were red and he was out of breath.
"Nothing. Why?"
"Good," I said cautiously, eyeing him as I climbed off his torso and lay next to him on the floor. He turned on his side and brushed away my hair from my face. Then he started kissing me again. The spot where my neck met my ears, lightly and sweetly, lips barely touching skin. I closed my eyes and ran my hands through his wavy hair. It seemed odd that I knew how thick it was, but even with that concrete sense, I lost my sense of gravity. I was somewhere between floating and falling, the in-between that feels both scary and awesome. Connor pulled me on top of him, and his hands slid up my back again. He watched me, wide-eyed and grinning like a fool, his fingers tucked underneath my bra strap. Then he pinched the closure, trying to pop the hook open. I rolled off him. "Seriously, Connor."
"What? I'm sorry. Do you not want to?"
"No, I don't want to," I said firmly. "I'm not like that." Connor's forehead wrinkled.
"You're not like what?"
I sat up and crossed my legs. "Listen, I might sneak out here to this dirty shed in the middle of the night to spend time with you, but I'm not like the other girls in school. I'm not going to lie back and let you do whatever you want to me. Things are going to go at my pace, or they're not going to go at all. Got it?" I'd hoped to avoid this kind of talk. I thought he might be able to read me, and we could have fun with each other and not get all heavy. Connor started laughing. Really laughing. It was infuriating.
"What other girls are you talking about?"
he asked.
"Don't play all innocent with me."
I second-guessed what I'd planned to say next, but when Connor didn't look any more serious, I couldn't help myself.
"I know you lost your virginity in eighth grade."
"Who told you that?"
He sounded pissed, which confused me. First off, boys always bragged about that kind of stuff. And second, everyone knew that Connor had gotten really drunk and had sex with Bridget Roma in her sister's car on New Year's Eve. I shrugged my shoulders and played it cool.
"Lots of people. It's true, isn't it?"
Connor blushed, and not in the shy way. He shook his head like I'd crossed a line.
"I don't know what that has to do with anything. I'm not trying to force you to do anything you don't want to do, that's for sure."
"Good."
A part of me regretted bringing it up, but I needed to make sure Connor respected me. Now that it seemed settled, I lay back down and tried to pull him close, only he turned away from me.
"You know what?"
he said.
"I'm not sure I can shift gears back that fast."
I sat up quickly and was about to say something witty and sharp back when suddenly my left butt cheek burned bad enough for me to gasp. Connor noticed.
"What happened?"
I squinted my eyes in pain.
"I think I just got a splinter."
"Are you kidding?"
Connor tried to stifle a laugh.
"Is that hard to believe? Look at where we are, Connor. Look at this place."
This was my punishment, I figured.
"Ah, this really stings."
Here, Connor said. Let me see.
I rolled over to my knees and stuck my butt up into the air. It was completely humiliating, but what other choice did I have?
You're going to have to take off your jeans.
I could barely swallow.
No way. How else am I supposed to see what's going on down there?
He stood up and grabbed the lantern hanging over our heads. Ugh, I thought, so much for boundaries. I unzipped my pants and pulled my jeans down. I'd never been undressed in front of a boy before.
I knew it would happen eventually. Maybe in a bed and breakfast? Or a nice hotel room?
Not a dorm. Those were gross. Definitely somewhere nicer than this.
Connor moved the lantern close. I felt its warmth.
Yikes,
he said in a voice serious enough to scare me.
You're bleeding. Just relax. I'm going to lift up your underwear a little bit so I can see. This sucker ripped right through the cotton.
His finger slid behind the elastic band and pulled it the tiniest bit down.
Okay, I see it. It's in pretty deep.
He fished a red Swiss Army knife out of his pocket. My heart raced until I saw he wasn't going for the blade, but the tweezers attachment.
Take a deep breath.
I did, and it was over fast. As soon as the splinter came out, my butt felt slightly better.
My ego? Not so much.
Connor brought the tweezers around to my face to show me the long, brown piece of wood.
You should probably get home and take care of it. Maybe put some peroxide on it or something, so it doesn't get infected.
All right. I hadn't exactly envisioned my night ending like this. Connor walked me back to the car. We didn't hold hands. Instead, I kept a few steps ahead to hide the fact that I was still blushing. But I did let him kiss me goodbye. Chapter 24. I woke up late Monday morning. I spent the last 3 nights in a row with Connor, and the lack of sleep was definitely catching up to me. That, and the fact that it had been 10 days since Autumn and I last spoke. It was yearbook picture day, and I should have gotten right up with the first buzz of my alarm to put some effort into getting ready. After all, my senior portrait wasn't just going to be in the yearbook. I would be immortalized up on the wall in the library. Number 9. Only I kept hitting the snooze button, and when I finally did get out of bed, I barely had enough time to grab a shower. It wasn't until I'd finished drying off and begun brushing my teeth that the steam on the mirror dripped away just enough to let me see what had magically appeared overnight. At first, I'd thought it might be a pimple. I touched it lightly with my fingertips, hoping to feel a bump or something to squeeze so it might go down before pictures. But it was a flat, red oval, maybe the size of a quarter, flecked with tiny purple dots of broken capillaries. It sat nearly in the middle of my neck, hovering an inch or so off my collarbone, where Connor had been kissing me last night. A hickey. A big, fat hickey on my neck for yearbook picture day. I thought of my senior portrait hanging on the library wall, all those powerful-looking girls like the young Miss B, accomplished, serious, and then me, President Hickey. People in the future might assume that I slept my way to being student council president. That splotch sucked all the dignity out of my accomplishment. I'd be remembered forever as a slut. I ran into my bedroom before my mom or dad could see me and slammed the door. I threw on a crisp white Oxford and fastened the buttons the way all the girls at school did, leaving 3 below the collar open. But the hickey shone like a red-bulbed lighthouse from the pale sea of my skin. I tried leaving just 2 buttons open, then 1, but the only way to completely hide my hickey was to do up every single button. The collar felt like a noose, or one of those stockades in the olden days, like a punishment I somehow deserved.
Our gymnasium had been turned into a portrait studio. Bright lights stood, tall on tripods, catching the dust flying through the air in beams projected on a rich, navy velvet curtain. An artsy-looking bald man in tweed slacks stood with his face pressed into the back of his camera. We'd been called down by grade. A few juniors were still left snaking along the court edge, tracing the perimeter of the gym. The flashbulb popped like a pulse. 3, 2, 1, pop, the photographer shouted. Next! The line inched forward. 3, 2, 1, pop. Autumn stood across the gym, head cocked to the side as she took out her braids. They left her hair perfectly wavy. Marcy Cooperstein stood at Autumn's hip and, along with a bunch of other girls, dug through their makeup bags, suggesting lipsticks and blushes to each other. Marcy rubbed a sheer pink lipstick across her lips before handing it to Autumn, who did the same. I leaned against the gym mats. I didn't have any makeup on, just my trusty Burt's Bees. And my hair was still wet from my shower. I cursed myself for not waking up earlier and getting ready properly, not to mention the fact that I had been branded. Connor came out of the boys' locker room and stood near me, pretending to read the intramurals postings on the bulletin board.
You look nice, he said. A little buttoned up.
I have to be, I hissed. You gave me a hickey last night. Now my senior portrait is going to be ruined.
Mike Domsky walked by us, and both Connor and I closed our mouths. But as soon as Mike was out of earshot, I laid into Connor again.
Hickeys are absolutely disgusting. It's like when a rancher brands his cattle with one of those hot poker thingies. I don't belong to you. I don't want your mark anywhere on me.
I'm sorry, he whispered. I swear I didn't do it on purpose.
It sounded like he meant it, but I was so mad I stormed off. That was all I needed on top of everything else, to have someone see us talking and then notice my hickey and put two and two together. I ended up two steps behind Mike Domsky. I wanted to pay attention to a single thing he said, but then he called out,
Hey, fish sticks!
It was pure reflex, the way my gut seized up. I wondered if Marcy would defend Autumn the way I used to, though I highly doubted it. Marcy cared too much about what guys like Mike Domsky thought of her. Only, Marcy didn't even need to defend Autumn. Autumn spun around, smiled, and said,
Hey, Domsky.
I couldn't believe it. Not only had Autumn forgiven Marcy, but now she was actually answering to fish sticks. I glared at her, but either she pretended not to notice me or she really didn't. One of the photographer's assistants clapped her hands and herded us over to the bleachers.
We're going to need everyone in the designated senior picture attire.
She pulled a fistful of fabric strips from inside her apron pocket.
Ties and blazers are mandatory for the boys, so if you don't already have both on, come see me.
She stepped behind a curtain and dragged a big cardboard box over to us.
And I've got black smocks for the girls. Please slide them on and make sure your bra straps aren't visible.
I stepped over to the box and picked up one of the smocks. I'd completely forgotten that this was what the senior girls wore for yearbook portraits. It was like a poncho, a deep V-neck sweater that slid over our heads. Other girls around me draped them on and then unbuttoned their shirts. It left your shoulders and your neck bare. I jogged over to the assistant.
Excuse me, I wanted to see if I could take my portrait in my uniform.
She looked at me queerly.
Are you a senior?
Yes.
Then I'm afraid that's not possible.
But this is the uniform I've worn for 4 years. It is sentimental value, plus the boys essentially get to wear their uniforms. If I can't wear mine, that amounts to sexism.
I tried to sound serious, but the photography assistant laughed at me. And suddenly, the reality of the situation squeezed my chest and made it impossible to breathe. While everyone else got into line, I grabbed my smock and sprinted to the bathroom.
I'd stolen some foundation from my mother's vanity before leaving the house. Now, I tipped my finger in the bottle and covered my fingertip in the thick, velvety liquid. Then, I tried to dot some makeup along the lighter edges of the hickey, blending it into the thick center. My hands shook. I was so upset. Unfortunately, my mom's skin was a couple of shades darker than mine, thanks to my Sicilian Grammy. The purple oval bled out into a haze of sickly orange. Instead of covering up the hickey, it only attracted more attention to it. The tears started coming. I heard the door open. Spencer came in.
"Hey, Natalie,"
she said, oblivious, walking over to the sink.
"Ugh, I dissected a frog last period, and though I've washed my hands 100 times, they still smell like formaldehyde."
She turned to look at me, and I felt her eyes narrow on my neck.
"Whoa! Who'd you get that from?"
"It's a bug bite," I said flatly. I didn't have time for this.
"Right. A bug bite. In November."
She dug inside her bag.
"That happens all the time."
I could feel Spencer lording it over my head. She knew exactly what was on my neck. She stepped forward with a wet paper towel and tucked her makeup case under her arm.
"Here, wipe that stuff off."
I stared down at the paper towel as it dripped a puddle on the floor. "I'm fine," I said.
"Thanks." "Natalie, quit being so proud and let me help you. Unless you want a big hickey dead center in your senior portrait."
She pushed some hair off my shoulder for a better look.
"So, who's the lucky guy?"
I took the paper towel and rubbed it hard and fast against my neck. "Look, this is a bug bite, okay? If you want to help me, great. If you don't, well, then get out of here." Spencer seemed like she wanted to say something, but she held it in and instead tilted my head back gently. Then she pulled the cap off a bright yellow crayon.
"What's that?" I said.
"The yellow makes your skin appear less red. I'll put this on first, then a layer of foundation, and then..."
She dug in her makeup bag.
"I'll put some powder on top. You and I are almost the same shade."
3 minutes later, I was transformed into a good girl. Spencer dabbed a last bit of powder on my neck.
"There, your, bug bite has vanished."
She also gave me some lipstick and put my head under the hand dryer while she raked her fingers through my damp hair. I came out of the whole thing looking halfway decent.
"Make sure you pose with your chin tilted down a little,"
she instructed, pulling some of my hair over my shoulder.
"Don't worry. You look really pretty, Natalie."
"Thanks," I said, and I was thankful, even though I couldn't look at her. The girl I used to babysit had just saved my ass big time. I went back into the gym with my smock on and my white shirt balled in my hand. Miss B stood off to the side with another teacher, watching. I walked past her and made sure that my chin was down, like Spencer had said. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Connor staring at me. 3, 2, 1, pop.
Chapter 25. We kept seeing each other, not just weekends, but school nights too, in secret, in the shed. 5th time, 6th time, 7th. The 8th time, Connor pushed the door open and handed me the lantern. For whatever reason, he wanted me to walk in first. The itchy stadium blanket was folded in half on the floor. Unfurled on top was a puffy sleeping bag, unzipped enough to reveal a plaid fleece lining. A pillow leaned against a cardboard box as if it were a headboard, in a pillowcase with edges trimmed in white eyelet lace.
"Is this your mom's?"
I asked uneasily, lifting it up off the floor. It had already gotten a little dirty. I brushed away what I could.
"She's got an entire closet full. She won't notice."
Connor hung my peacoat on a nail. Then he pulled out a couple of tea light candles from the pouch of his sweatshirt, lit them, and set them on top of a rafter. Flickering light lit up the peaks and corners of the shed like a cathedral.
"I thought
we could use a warmer bed, since it's getting pretty cold out here.
It was true. The last couple of times I'd been so freezing I'd lost feeling in my toes.
It's the best solution I could come up with, since you still refuse to come inside my house.
He let his words hang in the air, as if I might change my mind. I looked down. Connor had even swept the floor. There were no pine needles, no sawdust.
You didn't have to go to all this trouble,
I mumbled. I appreciated the effort, of course, but I was already too comfortable in this shed, considering the circumstances. This was not a romantic cottage in the woods, and Connor Hughes was not my boyfriend. I had to keep everything in perspective, or I would lose perspective entirely.
You're welcome.
Connor smiled, then lifted his sweatshirt. His t-shirt went up with it, and he tossed them both into an empty red wheelbarrow. I tried not to stare. His abs were carved and defined, rippling down to the waistband of his nylon track pants, which he also proceeded to slip off, leaving him in a pair of striped boxers and white socks pulled up to his calves. The smell of soap on his skin was intense.
Call me crazy, I said, but you might stay warmer if you kept your clothes on.
Connor laughed.
Are you kidding? This sleeping bag is rated for 10 degrees below zero. I used it when my dad and I went ice fishing last winter. If you and I don't take our clothes off, we'll sweat to death.
Suddenly, all the layers I'd cleverly thought to put on to fight the cold, a pair of thermal underwear, jeans, two pairs of socks, sweatshirt, t-shirt, and a cami, felt suffocating. He slid into the sleeping bag.
Come here, Sterling.
I stared down at his grinning face.
I don't think I'll fit. It's plenty big enough for two.
He shimmied over and patted the empty space next to him, a sliver of room. The wind outside leaked between the cedar shingles and sent the candles flickering. It hit me that, fancy sleeping bag or not, Connor and I couldn't meet out here much longer. It would be way too cold, and though the farm was quiet now, come holiday time there'd be workers in and out of here for supplies, and customers meandering all over our private maze of pines, on the hunt for the perfect Christmas tree. Part of me felt relieved at this very clear expiration date, but I felt sad, too. I'd always looked forward to winter, to mittens and colored lights, hot chocolate and velvet bows, corny Christmas songs, and the search to find the best present possible for autumn. The probability of us not exchanging gifts this year felt more real than I wanted it to. I took off my first layer of clothes, the jeans and my sweatshirt, and hung them up with my peacoat. It took some work to get comfortable next to Connor. We were squished so tightly together that our foreheads and the tips of our noses touched.